Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank.
What's happening?
I am trying to get the feel of my chair back because I just returned, as you know, from my summer travels. And I haven't sat here for a while, so I'm just...
Well, and the room is in a bit of disarray because people may not know that the room that you do your show from also doubles as our Pledge Central. And our Pledge Central finished on Friday, and it's still a bit disheveled.
Well, because we are still looking to meet our goal, as I understand, that we ended the pledge drive a little bit shorter than we thought we would be. And so we're kind of moving forward this week, kindly reminding people that if you already made your donation for the fall, thank you very much. We appreciate you and your support of the station. And if you haven't had a chance to become a member or have renewed your support, if you're listening to my program and you thought, oh, I listen every week, but I didn't get my pledge in during pledge drive, this is a great time. You still can support the station, help us meet our goal. And you don't even have to call in. You can visit kcbx.org to the Donate Now tab. And as I understand it, Hank, there's still thank you gifts that you can receive, even though we're kind of past official pledge drive. I saw on the board, there's a lot of tickets to a lot of different events. There are some KCBX swag items that are pretty cool and other activities around the Central Coast.
Yeah, especially the KCBX swag items. I know for sure that those are available and can be read all about on the website, kcbx.org.
And so we'll have, I mean, you can pledge for as long as you'd like, but we'd like you to do it sooner rather than later so we can reach our goal and then clean out my studio again so that we can have everything back to the way we like to have it and move forward. It's a good kind of like fall start. We'll get this done, move out the tables, get back to our day-to-day.
Did you say a false start?
Yeah, false start. Did you like that? Anything can be a new beginning, and a fall start is a good one. All right, so that's part of it, and it is nice to be back, and I have some interviews that I'm still working on to share over the next few months, so I'm excited to kind of bring that back. And if you missed last week's show with Sunny War, I was quite proud of that conversation, and it's available at kcbx.org under the Reluctant Therapist. Just find me on our website, and all of the shows are actually there that you can listen to. Or if you're feeling tech savvy, you can podcast our show by going to Apple Podcasts or ask your kid how they find their podcasts and look for Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist and hit subscribe, and the shows will be uploaded. You can keep up with all of my travels and all of the stories and all of the things that we're talking about week after week. And if you can leave a little review, that helps because then other people learn about the show and we would like to grow our community. So that's the business part of it. The other piece is this month, September, is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. Last week actually was Suicide Prevention Awareness Week. And although we're not going to focus the whole show on suicide prevention today, I did want to take a minute or two to talk about suicide prevention and to kind of remind people that we have great resources for those who may be feeling suicidal or blue or hopeless or isolated or alone in the universe. And you can make a phone call to the suicide prevention hotline, which is 800-273-TALK or 800-273-8255. And their phenomenally trained volunteers are ready to talk to you, to just listen, to offer an ear and resources if necessary. And then if you're would rather just text and not have to pick up the phone, the crisis text line has become very popular, and you just text to 741-741, just right up where you would usually put someone's name or their phone number. You just put in 741-741. Then the message, you can say, I need help, or I'm feeling desperate, or I need someone to talk to, or whatever message, and someone will text you back quickly. So that's another great resource. And if you're someone who is concerned about a loved one or a friend who might be displaying suicidal ideation, they seem hopeless or even restless, or they're giving away their things, or they talk about ending their life, or they start to change their habits. They go from being really outgoing to being very introverted. They may have suffered a lot of stress or health issues or transitions or losses in their life, and their behaviors are changing. Or sometimes someone is overly enthusiastic about life in ways that they're not usually, that all of a sudden they seem like they've thrown off all of their burdens and they're manically excited. That's another red flag. If you have someone in your life that you are concerned about, ask them. Ask them how they're feeling. Ask them if they're feeling suicidal. Ask them if they thought of taking their own life. Ask them if they have a means to taking their own lives. The asking part is essential, and oftentimes it's the thing we're most afraid to do, because a common misperception is that if we ask someone, are you feeling suicidal, that that might be the trigger. Right, that they know I wasn't thinking about it, but now that you brought it up. But that isn't true. If someone's feeling suicidal or hopeless or full of despair, having another human being just see them and notice them and say, hey, I get a sense that things aren't going well, and are you feeling suicidal? That sentence can save a life. And if they say, yes, I am, then that's when we turn to these phone numbers that I gave you before, the hotline 800-273-TALK 8255, or right there on their phone, text in 741-741, and then the message, I need help, and make sure you get them connected. Keep them safe. And the other part about keeping someone safe is to make sure that there are no lethal means for suicide, guns, knives, lots of medications, because when the lethal means are made less available, the rates of suicide attempts actually declines, which makes sense, because a lot of times suicide is an impulse decision. Someone might be feeling suicidal, but the actual action becomes an impulse, and the more readily available those lethal methods are, the more likely they are to be successful. The third step between after ask and then keep themselves safe is be there. Listening to someone's story is often the most difficult thing, because our first instinct, if we're helpful people, and I'm sure, you know, we all have good intentions, but when someone starts to say to you, I'm struggling, I feel overwhelmed, I don't know where to turn to, my life feels hopeless, it's terrifying to hear that, especially if it's a loved one or a child or someone that you care for deeply, or even just a friend. When you hear someone tell you their deep despair, our first reaction often is to tell them, no, you don't feel that badly, or I know it's really bad, but tomorrow will be a better day. We start throwing out cliches. The grass is always greener. You know, look on the sunny side. Put your faith somewhere. And those are well-intended comments, but they aren't helpful, unfortunately. Cliches, platitudes are not helpful. It makes someone feel like what they've told you is not as important as it really is.
Hey, you just hang in there. You'll be fine.
Yeah, don't, just another day.
Yeah.
And again, well-intentioned, you say it with love, but it's like handing someone a Hallmark card for suicidal ideation. It doesn't do that. So as much as you want to just have them say, no, I'm just kidding, I'm fine, when someone really tells you that, then it's the listen, listen, listen without judgment. You know, I hear what you're saying to me. I wish I could help. I'm sorry that you're experiencing this. I can't imagine how tough this time is. What can I do to be supportive? Is there someone we can reach out to? What kind of things are you doing to deal with these feelings, right? Those are the supportive responses. And it can be scary, because if all of their responses are, there's nothing you can do, I just want to kill myself, this is the worst thing ever, I don't know how to get through it, and then you're not sure what to do, then we go back to our hotline phone number. Because you can call that number and ask them, hey, I've got someone here who's suicidal and I can't get through to them. I'm not sure what to do. And the people trained on the hotline will be able to help you through that. So the steps of ask someone how they're feeling, then keep them safe, be there for them, listen in a non-judgmental way. Don't give advice, no cliches, don't just be a cheerleader, but be there for them. Help them stay connected. And again, that's helping them reach out for the resources that are there, help provide support. You know, and a lot of times when someone's really feeling desperate and there is absolutely nothing you can do but physically be in the room with them, sometimes that's enough. I remember when I went through a really challenging time, and you and I've talked about it, when Kelly went to college, and it was one of the more difficult times in my life. And a lot of people, you know, I kind of talked about it, and people were lovingly throwing out the cheerleader, "You're going to love this," and you're going to. But I wasn't ready to hear that. But one of my friends, Terry, and I were sitting in her car talking, and I was kind of telling her how I was feeling, and she just looked at me and she goes, "I can't fix this for you, but I will sit here for as long as you want me to. I will follow you home and sit in a chair at your house quietly for as long as you need me to." And that was the most therapeutic thing of everything I experienced, just the physicalness of another person willing to be there with me in that pain, but not feeling like they had to fix it. And then the last piece of the suicide prevention support is to follow up. Follow up. Send them a text. "How are you doing? I know things have been rough. Just wanted to let you know I'm thinking about you." So those are kind of my steps for today to remind you lovingly about suicide prevention awareness. And I was thinking about, you know, the steps and the causes. And unfortunately, we've seen suicide, actually the suicide rates in the United States have increased by 31% since 2001. So with all of our mental health care, with all of our efforts to provide services to people, we actually still continue to see an increase in suicide. And our youth, LGBT youth, are four times more likely to attempt suicide than straight youth. And adolescents in general have higher rates of suicidal thought than most other demographics. And then the other demographics of suicidal thoughts and also suicide attempts are middle-aged men. Men that are 50 and up. And there's a lot of theories about that. But another part of suicidal ideation that we don't talk a lot about is loneliness. And loneliness has been found to be a greater physical health risk than smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Isn't that crazy? That the stress that comes from feeling physically lonely and isolated impacts our heart, our blood pressure, our overall mental health and well-being, our physicalness. And yet we don't talk about loneliness because we think that it's easy to connect with all the social media and television and all the activities. But loneliness is an epidemic at the levels of our suicidal ideations and suicide attempts. So clearly there is something directly connected between the loneliness, the chronic loneliness and social isolation that people feel, and the steps towards suicide. So today, I thought we would focus our conversation on the antidote for loneliness. And one of the antidotes for loneliness, I thought, would be to tell anecdotes about times that we weren't actually lonely and to kind of share stories about how we used to connect and be more socially engaged in ways that we're comfortable and how we can maybe get ourselves back to that spot. So this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We'll be opening up the phone lines soon, and our number is 805-781-3875. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also follow us on our Facebook page. Check us out on our Instagram, elizabeth_trt. We have updates and different links, different stories. You can send me a message through those ways. If you want to share a message today and don't want to go on the air, Hank is going to be here for the hour, so you can call in and share your story or thought with Hank, and he will share it with me. We want you to be part of this conversation. We are Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls.
I find that I can choose. I'm free. Oh, yeah. So funny. I-
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And our number is 805-781-3875. Isn't it funny, Hank, that some things are like riding a bike? You know, how many times did your parents say, don't worry about it, it's like riding a bike. You always remember, you just hop right on. And
all the time, yep.
Sitting in here is like riding a bike in some way, a radio version of riding a bike. That once I get into the chair and I get settled in, I'm so happy to be here. I don't feel lonely.
Good.
Because I can see you.
Here I am.
So let's talk about loneliness. You know, I mentioned the social isolation and the physical aspects. There was a report that was done in the last couple of years through the Pew Research and then actually through a couple of different healthcare providers looking into the impact of loneliness. And they found that 2 in 5 people will report feeling feeling that their social relationships are not as meaningful as they hoped they would be. And that's, you know, 2 in 5 people talking about their marriage or their friendships or their weekly, you know, activities. They also found, though, that 1 in 5 say that they're flat out lonely, that they feel the physical heaviness of being lonely. And it goes kind of hand in hand with, over the last 50 years, we've become a society that has more U.S. households with just one person living in that household than ever before. So in some ways, our wealth and prosperity as a nation has provided us an opportunity for more people to actually be more lonely than ever before. Because we talk about that we're community people, that we are tribal people, that we like to interact, even though, and you probably would say that you're more of an introvert and don't want to interact, but you still wouldn't want to live alone in a cave. Like there's a necessity in you to feel connected. And we all have that. Even if we think we can shut that off or we don't need many people, that is part of our nature. But over the last 50 years, and especially post-World War II, we moved from being, you know, kind of connected through small towns or apartment buildings where you live with all of your relatives in the same apartment building or living on the farm, to these more spread out suburban nuclear families. And that's the 50s and 60s kind of drove people out of these small communities into these bigger, more expansive communities, into these, you know, single family homes that really weren't about connecting people to communicate or to interact. It was more about independent interactions or having your own space. And interestingly enough, that trend led to the independent senior living phenomenon that started growing in the 1970s and 80s. And actually in the 1990s, the silent generation, before the baby boomers, the silent generation all started hitting 65 around the 1990s. And that was the peak of solo living. This idea that we weren't going to live with our kids, have independent senior living. A lot of women ended up living alone for many, many years because their husbands passed away. But interestingly, we've seen a slight trend back because although the baby boomers are still very much about being solo and living on their own and having their own space, the millennials and the Gen Xers are actually more apt to move into communities, that they're making what we call makeshift family systems where they're, you know, they're 30, 35 years old, and they're still living in a house with 6 or 7 other roommates. One, fortunately or unfortunately, is that the cost of living is so great that it's actually forced people to live together more so than ever before, which is has been a boon to mental health because we do better when we're in a community of people. But for a lot of millennials and Xers, they're actually seeking out that community style of living. They're also more apt to be living home with their parents, you know, well into their 20s or 30s than any generation since before World War II. And so we've seen kind of a shift back towards this more connected way of being. But then we still see the evidence of chronic loneliness. You know, all the students have come back into town over the last few weeks. And one of the, you know, on top of the transitions of leaving home and meeting new friends and being a little homesick or having to experience life without your parents around or your friends around, one of the impacts, unexpected impacts of moving away to college is a sense of loneliness. And that's a newer trend in the last 20 years with this generation than generations before didn't experience a sense of loneliness on campus. And you know, these college campuses are amazing at having WOW weeks and orientations and activities to bring students together, to introduce them. They really work hard to try to build community so that the students don't feel this sense of social isolation. But even with all of those efforts to connect and have these students feel like they belong, there is a deep sense of loneliness amidst the sea of human beings. And part of it, and I hate to always go back and beat the same horse, but part of that is that we feel connected through our media, our technology, Skyping, FaceTiming, you know, how people can text all day long. We feel that we're connected because we can do that all day long. But what we don't recognize, and students definitely don't recognize, is that if you spend all of your extra time communicating with your family and friends that are away from campus, you aren't putting that time into connecting with the people that are right in front of you. And that is where we start running into mental health problems of feeling lonely, anxious, depressed. Even if you can talk to your parents 15 times a day, it's not the physical presence of your parents. And that physical presence is really what gives us a sense of being connected. And think of you and I could text 20 times to each other and it would, you know, be kind and businesslike. But when we see each other, we give each other our hug. That's a whole different level of connection. We don't have to say anything. It's like, I see you, you're here, we're good. And we did the hug show a couple weeks ago also. And if you missed the hug show, make sure you go back and listen to that. But we talked about skin hunger and that there, no matter how much you text someone or send cute emojis, it does not replace that sense of being physically hugged by someone.
I actually heard feedback during the pledge drive about that episode because I was in here for that one. Tyler was out and very positive. They enjoyed our interaction on that. And I said, well, I wasn't entirely comfortable with that, and they said, yeah, that came through and that was entertaining. So
that was good. It was a much longer hug than you ever probably expected.
Well, I mean, what we said was that it, at least with me and probably with most people, it depends on the hugger and the huggy. I mean, with you, I can do a 15-second hug and not feel the least bit uncomfortable, but there are certain people that I don't know or don't like, that a 15-second hug would be
an eternity.
Yeah.
But then even if you feel really comfortable with someone, that is a long time to hug, and you have to almost move past that quick just hug and really stay in there to make that connection. And then you start passing that energy, and that is an antidote for loneliness, is to make that physical connection. And so when I was thinking about, you know, I'm always asked to speak to the students when they come in at different organizations about how to get connected, how to feel close. And I always feel bad because each year over the last 15 years, the students are more invested in their technology and wanting to text and wanting to feel connected. And, you know, I don't want to be mean to my fellow parents, but the parents are part of the problem because they're not okay being separated from their children. And so they're texting their children just as much, or FaceTiming them, or wanting to be engaged in everything they're doing all day long. And so they're not allowing their children to separate and start to make social connections, because there isn't a limited amount of, you know, social connections we can have. I mean, there's a limited amount of connections you can actually maintain. And I want to say the number is like 35, but I'll have to look that up. It's not a huge, but you can have relationships outside of your family and not diminish the closeness or relationship you have with your family. And I don't know if families today, my generation of parents, actually instilled or taught or modeled how to make social connections with other people. And that came to light this weekend. My husband and I were home. Chris and I were home, and we came upon. Are you familiar with the comedian Sebastian Maniscalco?
I think he played a show around here, and
yes,
we ran some underwriting announcements. But before that, no.
I find him hilarious, and a little blurb popped up, a little bit that he did, and it was about company, and it struck a chord with me so much that, well, let's play, because I brought the clip. Let's play it, and then we'll talk about company and loneliness. This is Sebastian Maniscalco.
I was sitting in my house a couple weeks ago, just relaxing. My doorbell rang. This is weird. It's a different feeling when your doorbell rings today opposed to 20 years ago, right? 20 years ago, your doorbell rang. That was a happy moment in your house. It's called company. be sitting there on a Thursday night watching TV. Your doorbell rang, the whole family shot off the couch. Oh my God! Put the lights on, somebody's here! We got people! The whole family went to the door. The kids were in socks, they slid up to the door. Nobody looked to see who it was. Right, you just opened up the door, you were like, oh my God, look at that. Look at who's here. And you'd ask him, what the hell are you doing here? And the person would be like, I was in the neighborhood. I thought I might stop by, see how the kids are doing. They're like, oh, come on in. We're gonna have some cake. Your mother had a little Entenmann's. Maybe some Sara Lee crumble cake. Just in case company came over. She made an announcement when she bought it. She's like, listen, nobody touch this cake. This is for company only. Those crap muffins, those are for you people. You better hope to God somebody comes over so we could cut the cake. She put her cake in the middle of the table, proud of it. And she put it right in the middle. Cut yourself a slice. Want a cup of coffee? We're gonna do want some Sanka? Yeah, that's old school. A lot of the young kids are looking at me like, what is that, an iPhone app? What the hell is Sanka? Your mother had a tin, brown and orange tin of Sanka, ready to go just in case the company. She put a big pot on the table. Go ahead. Nobody had a cell phone back then. If your house phone did ring, your father stood up and said, nobody get that phone. We got company. And you lost track of time. 2 hours went by. You were like, we got to get out of here. That's okay. Next time we're going to come by you. Be like, yeah, my door's always open. Now your doorbell rings? It's like, what the? All right, your own mother's crawling across the kitchen floor. Get down my army crawl. Army crawl, get in the closet. Go get the sword in the living room. Somebody get the sword underneath the couch in the living room. There's a sword.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and that was Sebastian Maniscalco. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but he's a very funny man. And I heard this clip, this segment over the weekend, and I was thinking about, yeah, what happened to company? I love company. I love when people just show up at my house, and I really only have a couple friends. My friend Bruce will show up unannounced, and I love that. And once in a while, someone else will come over, but that's very few. And Chris and I like to drop in on friends if we're in the neighborhood and see what they're doing. I never really thought much about it because I don't know about you, Hank, but I grew up in a house that the rule was the house always had to be guest ready because you never knew when someone was going to pop by. So our beds were always made. The kitchen was always cleaned up. There was always some sort of snack around. The yard looked nice. Like my parents always wanted to be guest ready just in case someone came over. My dad invited people over. We had a spontaneous, you know, barbecue. And that was the normal for all of my childhood and growing up and a bit of when the kids were little. But I can't even tell you when that stopped being a thing. And part of my class I teach my students, they do a tech fast, and we talk about that every year. And I ask them to stay off their technology for 24 hours. And one of the biggest struggles they have is they feel socially isolated. They don't know how to connect with their peers without being able to text them. And I always look at them and say, well, go knock on their door. or show up at their house, ride your bike over and knock on the door. And they look at me like that would be worse than getting hit by a train or having your, you know, clothes fall off in public, that they would never do that. How did we get here? So I think the only way we can make company, and do we want to make company a thing? I mean, do you like people dropping by your house?
No.
Okay.
I mean, not the pop-in, not the unannounced.
So if I just show up, ride my bike over, you're going to not answer the door?
No, I would answer the door, and I would invite you in, and the house would be somewhat presentable.
Okay.
I would certainly prefer a heads-up phone call.
Okay.
Hey, I'm in the neighborhood. Can we come by in about a half hour? I mean, we have not a lot of pop-ins, but it does happen once in a while. It's fine. It's just not preferred, I think.
All right. Well, I guess from the polite standpoint, maybe there's the we can text and give you a heads up or coming by. But there is something exciting about I was in the neighborhood. I thought I'd pop by and say hi. I love that. I miss that.
And there are people that I would not mind to pop in. I mean, at this point, they're spread far and wide across the country. But I mean, yeah, I have friends that I would be fine with a pop in, or I'd be fine popping in on them too. But yeah, it's certainly decreased over the years.
When you were a kid, did your parents have company? I mean, were you having gatherings and people? Was there a special? I love the line about my mom had Entenmann's, and I guess you have to be an East Coast person to get that, or Sara Lee. That I remember having, like there was a special drinks or cake or whatever that only was for when company came. So we looked like we were waiting for them.
We didn't have that. Well, I mean, everything, all of our social get-togethers were kind of pre-planned, you know, like Christmases and holidays, Thanksgiving, things like that. We didn't do a lot of spontaneous entertaining.
So I wonder if that was just kind of a weird thing of our family, because my dad is a super social human, and I remember as kids, on the weekends, he'd go, let's go for a ride, you know, let's go kick some tires, and we'd always inadvertently end up just kind of dropping in on different people and hanging out for a bit. Now, maybe my dad was just trying to pass time because it was his, you know, my mom said take the kids and do something, but I think we really just enjoyed, also we weren't so scheduled back then, you know, we might have played AYSO soccer, but it wasn't all weekend long or every afternoon. There was a lot more social downtime or recreational downtime where people actually would be hanging out at the house. Maybe that's one of the things that have changed. I wonder, you know, if we don't keep our houses as guests ready, and so we don't want to feel embarrassed or feel judged. So that's my question. Am I the only one? Our number is 805-781-3875. What do you think about company? Do you have company over often? Do you mind drop-in company? Are you guest ready? Do you like to drop in on other people? What are your thoughts on this? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, and just a loving reminder that although we've wrapped up our pledge drive for fall of 2019, we came in a bit shy of our goal, a little shy of our goal. So if you did already donate, thank you so much. We appreciate it. But if you've still been thinking about it, or you didn't get time, or the weeks just flew by, or you were on vacation like me most of the summer, we'd really appreciate you taking some time right now to renew your membership or offer your support. And you can just go to kcbx.org, look for the Donate Now tab, and make your donation today. It'd be great. Tell them you love me. That would be helpful. Or tell them you don't. That would be helpful too. And you also can still receive one of the thank you gifts on the board here. There's lots of tickets, lots of events, lots of KCBX swag. So kcbx.org would be helpful. We're going to take a moment to catch our breath. You can make your donation now, and we'll be back to take your calls. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I'm looking for that lonely street. I've got a sad tale to tell. I need a place to go and weep. Where's this place called Lonely Street? A place where there's just loneliness, where dim lights bring forgetfulness.
much as I. Patsy Cline, that's a painful song. Lonely Street. I mean, clearly loneliness is not just a modern era issue. Loneliness has always been a struggle for society. And what's interesting, it was much less common in the 50s and 60s than it is today. You know, and we have talked before about bowling in isolation. I can't remember the name of the book. But it was a book that talked about the move from having activities after work where you'd have bowling leagues or softball leagues or basketball leagues or played bridge or, you know, had different clubs that you belonged to. And that started to fade out over the last 50 years and, of course, left this vacuum. And then the more we developed our homes into these kind of private castles that we didn't want to leave, with screening rooms and audio systems and pools and workout rooms, that we became actually more isolated. And it feels good at the beginning. I mean, I like my alone time. I definitely enjoy being alone. I think I quite often don't feel like I have enough alone time. But then there is this point where you leave the feeling alone time and it starts to become lonely. Like, I can feel myself going from, hey, this was really fun, to now I'm just kind of feeling a little weird being I've been hanging on the couch too long, that binging of whatever it was. You know that point where you go from like alone to I need some other.
Sure. This is wonderful. I'm in heaven. I've got my pants off. I'm watching TV. And then, you know, a few hours go by. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm done.
I need someone to talk to. Now I'm just a weirdo.
Yep.
And it kind of creeps up on you, because loneliness doesn't happen in the instant. It's something that slowly creeps up. It feels good. It can go for 6 months or maybe a year where you're doing a project or you have things you wanted to get done, and then you stop answering, you know, texts from friends, or you kind of turn down all of those invitations to go someplace, or you don't answer when company shows up at your door. And then it becomes like this blanket, you know, that kind of comes over you, like this fog, the heaviness that makes it more and more challenging to get up and go out. Because I think being social takes energy. You know, it energizes you once you do it, but I think it takes an internal motivation. And maybe, again, that's just my personality, that I don't naturally wake up or, you know, every day say, I can't wait to go out and do this event or go to a play or go to a movie. I find myself thinking my couch looks really comfy. But there's never a time that I'm sad that I actually went out. And Saturday night, I worked as the MC at the Butterfly Ball, which is part of it was support for the Central Coast State Parks Association. It was really a fun event. I was a little nervous about it, having to stand up in front of the room of people and say meaningful things. I was nervous about that, but so many nice people, such a beautiful event, such wonderful food. And I went home that night and I said, I need to do this more often. I need to get my social on.
That really has come to mind over for me the last couple of years, especially as I get older. But as appealing as sitting on the couch is, you know, a few weeks ago got invited to a wedding of somebody that wasn't especially close, not one of our BFFs or anything, but it's a wedding. And I really wasn't enthused about it, but the time got closer and closer. Let's go check out the wedding. And we had the best time. And, you know, it would have been fine sitting at home and watching TV, but my philosophy is changing to always take the activity. You know, if there's a movie playing, go see the movie. It's better to see the movie than to sit at home, or better to go to the wedding even if you don't know the bride and groom that well, and you're gonna have a good time. At least I do.
No, I agree, and I think that's the reminder I get every summer when I go do these long extended kind of journeys around the country, how nice people are. You know, 90% of the time, maybe even 95% of the time, the conversations I have with strangers are really uplifting, and usually ends up with some sort of invitation to carry on the conversation. And remember a couple of years ago, I met a husband and wife from Louisville, Kentucky, and he was one of the city councilmen in Louisville, Kentucky. And we just had this conversation in a campground in North Dakota, and they were so friendly and so nice. And they invited Chris and I to come stay with them in Louisville. And so on our way back from the trip, we actually went and stayed with them. And that they put on the most welcoming experience. They had a guest room and they'd put out gifts that were local to Louisville and, you know, had water and stuff for us to drink, and they had a nice meal and they planned a way to show us all their town. And I've never loved a stranger experience more than that. And there were people that were probably 180 degrees opposite than Chris and I, but we had the best time getting to know their city and seeing a slice of their life and just sharing stories. And that is the essence, I think, of company and community and the antidote for loneliness. So I guess I go back to my initial question. 805-781-3875 is our number, and time flies by so quickly. I want to make sure we get those calls in. 805-781-3875, what is your experience of company? Can I just show up at your house? Are you okay with me just knocking on the door and coming and say hello? Is your house guest ready? Or what has changed? How have we changed as community? Do we not want to have people pop in? Are we less apt to make relationships or friendships than we did? And I think about my parents' life when I was young. They were very social. They had a bridge group and a hearing league group, and my dad played in softball league and played in a basketball league, and as kids we'd always go to all the games and we'd play with all the other kids. And I remember going to Stanford football games with all of our friends, and we'd sit in the end zone and eat Malteds. And, you know, that kind of that social community was really strong and really supportive. And my husband and I haven't been as social as my parents were. We don't have as many parties. We also don't have, you know, the social group activities that we do. And I'm sad about that. And I'm sad that we didn't have that same kind of natural inclination to join in, because I've watched my parents their whole life. They moved from the town that I grew up in down to another town, and they went about the business of creating a social life. They joined a club. They, you know, had people over. They went to introduce themselves to their neighbors. They created another community. And I wonder if I would have that wherewithal if we were to pick up and move to a new place to kind of go through those social actions of creating relationships with other people. And without that skill, without having seen that skill done or living that skill, how do we teach that skill to our children? What do we expect of them when they go to college or they move out on their own? You know, I think about my daughter who's living on her own for the first time. She graduated from college, you know, in December, and she's living up in the Bay Area and working. And she talks about feeling kind of lonely and where do I find friends? Or, you know, she went to a gym to start working out, but people aren't naturally talking to her. And I feel bad because I think, did I miss out one of those parenting skills about how to kind of reach out and gain community because we didn't do it that much? I don't know.
We just had a phone call from somebody that didn't want to necessarily talk on the air, but mm-hmm. she had a good point, kind of going back to your couple from Kentucky. Mm-hmm. She lives alone in a large house and kind of was feeling that and decided to open up her house to a B&B, Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And so now she has people come and stay at her house. And she says, you know, it depends on the people. Some of them wish to remain kind of to themselves, but oftentimes it turns into a very social situation. And she welcomes her home and shares, and just wanted to get that across, that that's how she combated loneliness.
Well, and I think often about the era of boarding houses. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to see more boarding houses. I don't know if they have to be like a boarding house, but, you know, years ago, generations ago, when young people graduated from college or moved out on their own, you know, young women would maybe move to take a job in the city. There were boarding houses where you'd take a room, and there was a woman, usually a widow, who had opened up her house, and she would feed the girls, and everyone had their own place. But they kind of build this community, and you've seen, like, when girls were working in the steno pool, or, you know, they would work together in groups at a department store, then they would all live together in one of these boarding houses. And maybe that's what we need to do with these big houses, like our caller talked about, to start initiating places where people can come and live in community and have that kind of de facto family experience when they're not living near home.
I like the thought of Airbnb more because it they leave. I mean, there's an end date. It's a, I mean, they might stay for 4 or 5 days or something, but then they're gone. With I think with a boarding house, it's more of a long-term thing. So.
Well, and because you become, again, that de facto family where you're hopefully kind of guiding and mentoring a little bit, providing support, being a cheerleader when they have ups and downs at work, kind of taking the place of, instead of, you know, living at home with your parents, it's kind of that one step more to freedom, but it's still within the confines of a guide. And I think of like the house mom and fraternities or sororities kind of offers that connection, that multi-generational connection. I think that's important. And I'm not sure why the whole phenomenon of boarding houses even went out of favor. Maybe because the cost of living was still such that people could afford to rent individual apartments, or they had more opportunities. You know, they're making more money. I don't know. But I think that would be a way of kind of bringing together people who are feeling isolated and those who need a place to launch, but not necessarily wanting to live alone. Our number is 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And we're talking about loneliness and social isolation and how it's important to do the work to fend off loneliness and social isolation, because there is kind of this direct correlation between depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, and social isolation and loneliness. And as I mentioned earlier, the CDC and a few health companies had gotten together and did a study on the impact of loneliness on our mental health and our physical health. And I was shocked to see that they were able to make a connection between smoking cigarettes and loneliness. And they found that chronic loneliness and social isolation can damage your health, your physical health, as much as smoking 15 cigarettes per day. So although it can start to, you know, feel comfortable to not have to get your house guest ready or take company in when they show up, it can have long-term implications to your heart, to your blood pressure, to your physical well-being, to live in isolation. And they also found that 1 in 5 people in their study admitted to really feeling chronically lonely and not knowing how to get through that or to improve their life.
Did you come from a large family?
Not really.
A lot of siblings, no?
There's 5 of us, my mom, dad, and my brother, sister, and I. So we are the core of 5. But my parents both grew up on the East Coast. So we have a large extended family on the East Coast. But my parents moved to California when we were very young. And so I would say that we were kind of this small unit of people. But my parents, as I mentioned, created a really strong network of friends.
I'm just wondering, I mean, to me, a family of 5 sounds huge.
Does it?
But I'm wondering if that's why you're so much more social, because you had that environment. I was the only child, and so I think I was, out of necessity, learned to deal with my solitude, you know. I've always been able to, you know, entertain myself. Even when I was a kid, if I started to get bored, my mom would hand me a Matchbox car, and I'd be good for an hour, and, you know, then books, and now an iPad, and just give me something to distract myself, and I'm good.
But you never felt lonely as a kid?
I won't say never.
Okay.
I learned to deal with that a lot. When I did get lonely, I'd go out and ride my bike or go for a walk or go do something. Or even now, I'd go for a drive. Mm-hmm. I dealt with that, like I said, out of necessity, just because I think if I'd had 2 or 3 siblings around, I probably would have been more socially outgoing.
So here's what's interesting about sibling research, though, is that siblings will be close for a period of time, but as soon as they hit like grade school, elementary school, that sibling intensity tends to spread out a little bit. And, you know, siblings can be either your best friend or your worst enemy. So it's not necessarily going to be an antidote for loneliness. You can be in a family with 5 siblings and none of the siblings speak to each other. And you can have one, you know, a child who's a solo child, but they have a really deep, strong connection to their parents. So they develop, I think it's I feel like it's more of that social interaction, that social connection, that, you know, knowing that you're not alone in the universe and having someone to spend some time with, to pass the time with, to just swap stories. And I don't know how great we are at small talk. If somebody pops in and says, hey, in the neighborhood, I thought I'd come by and say hi, then people are nervous, like, what will we talk about? So you put out the snack and you sit over a cup of coffee and you share your stories. Are we as apt to share our stories now as we were 20, 30 years ago? Or have we kind of lost the art of just small talk and sharing stories? 805-781-3875 is our number. Hi, Diane, what's on your mind?
This is Mary Ann. Is this who you're trying to talk to?
Yes, Mary Ann, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I just don't know if you were aware of the local program that's been being very helpful for people that are lonely, and especially older women that have a big house. It's called Home Share Slow, mm-hmm. and a person can rent out through our agency, which will do the screening and help do the placement and kind of help get the kinks out of a situation. So a first person can share their home with someone who needs housing, and it's a wonderful way for especially for widows and older people who have more room than they need to have some companionship too.
Do you know anyone who shares their home, or do you share your home through that, Marianne?
I haven't yet, but it's a possibility. I'm on the board, and that's one reason I joined the board, is because I thought, you know, this would be something I might want in a year or two.
And what are some of the success stories that you've heard?
We've had a lot of success stories. People that are just, they're really compatible. It's really working out for both of them. You know, and the person that they share with might be a student. It might be somebody that's, you know, not their, you know, necessarily their age bracket, but there's some commonality there, and, you know, they can have as much interaction with each other as they want. You know, it's flexible. It's a great program.
And if someone wants to participate in Home Share Slow, are there meetings, or is it just a website, or how does that work?
They should go on the website, and then they they can attend there. And I don't have all that information in front of me. I'm sitting in my car, but they can go to their coffee chat,
okay,
where they can go and get information. They also could just talk directly to or call a phone number and talk to somebody who helps with that placement.
And so, when you think about opening up your home, what are some of the hopes you have for that connection for yourself? What do you hope as the benefits?
Well, I think that, you know, that as we do get older, we do face that problem of being lonely, and maybe the house is bigger than we need, but we don't want to give it up. You mm-hmm. know, it's been home, and we love the yard, and we love the location, and we know the neighbors, and we don't want to give that up. And so it's a way of being able for people to stay in their home and have that continuity, because I think you give up, as you get older, you do give up so much, so many things, mm-hmm. and it's nice if you don't have to give up your home, too.
Absolutely.
And then additionally, maybe you get somebody that you're really compatible with, and you have,
Well, and Marianne, while we're talking, I got the information from Home Share Slow. It's homeshareslow.org. And tomorrow night, Wednesday night, the 18th, at 7 p.m., there's going to be a slow coffee chat at Kreutzberg Coffee on Hygera Street. So that was perfect timing to have the show and to call in and talk about it. So I guess the coffee chat is just an informal gathering to learn more about home sharing, and it's free open to the public.
Either interested in sharing their home or interested in, you know, either a seeker or a provider is what we call them. So either one can go, you know, to those coffee chats and learn about it.
So tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at Kreutzberg, the slow coffee chat. And I think it would be fun to do a show with some people who have successfully done a home share and how that worked out for them and what that kind of offered to them.
Oh, I'm sure we'd be glad to do that. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for calling in, Marianne.
Thank you so much. Okay.
This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And in our last few minutes today, there's a couple of things I want to wrap up. One, have you watched the show Grace and Frankie with Lily Tomlin?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that's
a binge watch that every season.
So that's a great example of kind of that social isolation problem being fixed by these two women kind of finding each other and home sharing and sharing their lives. And I love the story behind what drives this whole show. And I also wanted to remind everyone that we opened the show talking about Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and that's what September is. And it's important that we stay vigilant in our relationships, especially because it's so easy to get isolated. It's easy to have our friends that we know are struggling kind of slip through the cracks, or, you know, we watch them posting things on Facebook. And so we're knowing that they're struggling, but assuming that someone else is stepping in and keeping an eye on them or making sure they're okay. If we have friends that are struggling, it's not as easy now just to pop in because we don't do company the way we did 40 years ago. But maybe we need to reinstitute that company, that dropping in, checking in on our friends and neighbors, because we don't know when they're struggling. If they're posting on Facebook and everything looks great, that is just a post on Facebook. It doesn't say anything about what happens the minute they've already put that post up. And so to think about, outside of our own experience, what's happening to our friends, our loved ones, what kind of things are they struggling with? If you get a sense something's going on, ask them. Ask them flat out, are you feeling suicidal? What has changed in your life? What's going on for you? And then keep them safe. Be there for them without judgment, no platitudes, no cliches. It's going to get better tomorrow. Look on the sunny side, cheer up. Those things don't
help. Snap out of it.
So I know you just, that's stuck with snap out of it. That classic Cher line. Those things feel good when we say them and they're well-intended, but they're not as helpful as just listening and saying, I can't fix this, but I am here for you. I can't fix this, but I will listen. I can't imagine how tough this is. What can I do for you? And then help them to get connected. Utilize those numbers that we have, those lifelines that connect people to help. We have the hotline for suicide prevention. It's 800-273-8255, 800-273-TALK, or if you'd like to text, just go to the texting line and type in 741-741, and in the message you can say whatever, I'm in trouble, I need help, and you can text with someone right away who's been trained. If you are feeling suicidal yourself, you are not alone. It is something that many people experience throughout our lifetime, and there is help and there is treatment and there are people waiting to talk to you and support you. Use those numbers, use those lifelines. That's what they're there for. And as always, I appreciate being able to sit in this chair and spend an hour with you each week. If you'd like to make sure you make your donation, go to kcbx.org to donate now. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Beside me in your way.